Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. Happy Monday. I hope everybody had a great weekend. We had a fun weekend, a few changes in the Brewer household. My 18-year-old grandson has joined the Army. And he leaves today. I take him to the recruiter's office here in West Palm this morning at 10 o'clock. And they get him to Miami, and he flies out of Miami at about 3 o'clock this afternoon to South Carolina to go to boot camp. He'll be gone for 10 weeks, and that's a long time for any of our kids to be away from each other. So, we had a party last weekend because it was my son's birthday, Josh's birthday. He turned 18. And next week is the oldest grandson's birthday, all in the same family. So then we got a wonderful surprise that one of my granddaughters, who resides in Texas, she's a teacher, and she had summer vacation. So we had 2 weekends in a row we had little get-togethers. Saturday was a small one just here at my house in the pool before the heavens opened up. But it's a big thing, saying goodbye to a teenager who's going to go out. And my husband keeps telling me he's not going to come back the same kid, you know. And I don't know whether I like that or not. I kind of like the kid that I have. So that's what's happening here. And my husband is finally doing much better health-wise and eating, and so we're moving forward with a lot of different things. I hope your weekend was a great one. I have so many things I want to talk about this morning because so many things came to me. Actually Friday, Saturday, I got lots of things in my Facebook page and in emails to let me know about a lot of different things that are going on in the world. So I thought I was going to talk about immunizations, and I'm still up in the air about that, but I think Shelley and I will touch on that because Shelley's quite involved in that. But I do want to touch base on several other things that are going on. So I'm going to bring in Shell. And then we're going to talk about some of the things that have been sent to me this week. Good morning, Shell.
Well, good morning, Renee.
How you doing, honey?
Doing good. How are you doing, sweetheart?
I'm good. I'm sitting here looking. It's kind of a dreary beginning to our day, but it's kind of drizzly out right now. It's not really raining hard, but it's drizzly. So a lot of things got sent to me this week by people who know that I will talk about them, and I'm quite excited to share some of them. Although some of them are disturbing, some of them are also I'm going to start with the first one because it just got me thinking, oh, my God, but I'm so happy that so many people are standing up for what they know is right. And I have so many people messaging me right now. I'm having trouble staying focused. You probably hear that in my voice, but everybody's, Renee, are you on? Renee, what's going on? Blah, blah. I'm like, okay, I'm on the air, everybody. So I will have to stop correspondence with all of you so that I can talk on the show. The first thing that I want to share with everybody is a story that came to me through Upworthy. And I get a lot of stuff from Upworthy that I appreciate, and I don't always talk about the article. But a lot of times I take what they send me and expand on it. And I think that this is one of those stories that is absolutely a sign of the times. It is a story about a school that sends home a letter to the grandparent of a young girl by the name of Sunny Kaylee. She was going to a private school, and she is she's very in touch with her male side. You know, like we say, a lot of young boys are in touch with their feminine side. Well, Sunny is, she's adorable. She's got real rosy cheeks, big brown eyes. Her hair and her eyes are exactly the same color. She's really cute. And she loves boy things. And they sent home a letter to her grandmother, telling her grandmother that, you know, if she didn't start dressing like a girl, she'd have to leave the school. So I'm going to read you the yeah, it's, and she's not dressed, she's just dressing in T-shirts and shorts because that's where she's comfortable. And I got to tell you, my sister Barbara, that's who she was. If dress code was a skirt, or a dress or something, Barbara had shorts on underneath her dress.
Yeah, so, I never wore dresses when I was younger. I still don't like wearing dresses unless I'm going mm-hmm. to some sort of a formal affair or something. And I'm 55, and I rarely mm-hmm. wear dresses. I'm just not comfortable in them.
Well, this little girl, I mean, she's very open. There's you instantly, just looking at her face, you know you're going to like her because she's shiny and bright and smiley. Here's the reporter's accounting on interviewing Sunny. You won't have any problem getting Sunny Kale to open up about her hobbies. The energetic 8-year-old will probably show you her collection of coins, hunting knives, and autographed baseballs. The interviewer asked her why she liked collecting those things, and she said, "It's fun." She likes teddy bears and bracelets, but for the most part, she's interested in things that might be considered boys' hobbies. Doris is Sunny's great-grandmother. Sunny realizes that she's a female, but she wants to do boy things. She wants to be rough and tough. Doris Thompson is Kaylee's great-grandmother, but has raised her since she was an infant. When she turned five, she asked for a short haircut. Doris said she had hair down to her waist and she wanted to give it to a little child who had cancer and lost his hair. So I said, "That's great." So we cut her hair and then she started wanting to dress with jeans and a T-shirt. She didn't want her little frilly dresses anymore. And the reporter says her appearance started leading to awkward questions. "Do kids ever ask you if you were a boy or a girl?" Sunny says, "Sometimes." "What do you say to them?" "That I was a girl." "Did it hurt your feelings that they would ask?" "No." The issue caught the attention of administrators at Timberlake Christian School, where Kaylee was a student. The principal sent home a letter reminding Thompson of the school's religious affiliation and its right to refuse students who contradict a biblical lifestyle. In the letter, the principal writes, "We believe that unless Sunny and her family clearly understand that God has made her female and her dress and behavior need to follow suit with her God-ordained identity, that TCS, which is Timberlake Christian School, is not the best place for her future education." Thompson was offended by the letter's language and its references to biblical passages about sexual immorality. "To claim that we are condoning sexual immorality in our home is nonsense. We are Christians. We understand the Bible and we know the Bible. Sunny knows it very well. She's accepted Christ." The reporter says, Thompson says Kaylee is simply a tomboy and that she's too young to understand sexual orientation or gender issues. "If my child grows up to be a homosexual or transgender, I'll love that child that much more." Although she was not forced to leave, Kaylee is now in a public school and no longer attending Timberlake Christian. She wishes things could have turned out differently. Sunny says, "I should just be able to be me and not let them worry about it. So there is a video that I think is very good. It's on my Facebook page. If this, you know, enrages any of you, you might want to watch it, because if you read the story and don't see the little girl, it will enrage you. It'll make you feel like, you know, you want to say something to somebody. But she is so dealing with it and is so okay with it that you will be too. She's the perfect example of what we teach kids all the time. Be yourself. Isn't that what we say to them? Be yourself.
Well, of
be
course.
Who you want to be.
Of course, of course. And it's I'm offended by the school stance on this, because I find it, first of all, extremely unspiritual. If they're saying that they're a religious school and that they have religious doctrines, when you look at any religious icon throughout history, including Jesus, they were always very accepting of the differences in people, and they didn't judge. They certainly wouldn't judge somebody by the way they were dressed. And to me, that is extremely superficial and ignorant, because, you know, I'm not gay. I'm not saying there's anything wrong in being gay. I'm just making a statement. I'm not gay. I've been heterosexual my whole life. I've been married I've been married twice. I've been engaged two other times. But I am a tomboy. I don't like frilly clothes. That doesn't mean that I'm not happy being a woman. I'm extremely happy being a woman. I'm very comfortable, but I'm also a tomboy. You know, we go to Sears. My sister goes, she wants to look at the clothes, and I want to go to the tool department. It's just who I am, but I'm completely a woman as far as my sexual preferences or my sexual orientation. I don't like using the word preference. My sexual orientation is that I'm attracted to men, but I'm very tomboyish, and there's a lot of men out there that like women who are like that. They don't want the frilly little thing. They like the woman who's going to get under the hood of a car and rip down an engine with them. I've knew a lot of men like that. So I'm actually kind of offended that they would say, because they're a religious school, that this is against them. If anything, they should be more tolerant of the differences in people and actually just be promoting love and acceptance of one another instead of creating stigmas. I find that very unreligious.
Well, and very sadly, we know that a lot. We pick up on that a lot in the guise of religion, in the guise of God-fearing, actual hypocrites. There's a lot of turmoil, and
yeah,
religion
absolutely
can make break you, and we know that. Religion can be the greatest thing that ever happens to you if you embrace it and realize what it's about. It's about devotion. It's about faith. It's about knowing that if you do the best you can do and be the best you can be, then you're doing what you should be doing. It's not about passing judgment. It's not about who's supposed to be who and who's not supposed to be somebody else. It isn't. It just isn't about that. So I think that you and I talk about these kind of things a lot, because we have come across so many things in our lifetime that are different.
That's right.
I mean, we often laugh, which is, I guess, in some circles would be considered unkind, but you and I tend to laugh at things that we don't fully understand instead of being so horribly judgmental about them. And I think we all have mechanisms that save us from being too unkind. But I think that this is a world made up of every kind of creature that there is. I mean, there is nothing else but what we have here in our world. And I think that we have to learn how to accept all of that. But what I loved about this story is, I guess you almost have to see this little girl's face, because wow. it's so much honesty. And, I mean, what did happen to the terminology tomboy? Shell, you just used it. I use it all the time. Why does something have to be something else? Why does it have to have a dark side to it? And
well,
if somebody...
a lot of that has to do with the mental health establishment now, where every single personality trait now has got to have some sort of a diagnosis attached to it. So if
yeah.
you're a tomboy like I was and still am, that's some sort of a sexual dysphoria or something like that. I mean, they actually put a title to that. There's nothing wrong with me. I don't have any kind of mental illness. This is just my particular personality. I'm happy with it. It's never created problems with me. There have been people that thought I was gay throughout my life because I'm such a tomboy, okay? But, you know, any man that's ever been around me has always known that I wasn't gay, you know? And it's and actually the funny part about it is if there's gay women around me, they're the ones that know I'm not gay because they're not picking up any attraction from me, you know. It's people that are uncomfortable with these type of subjects or maybe uncomfortable with who they are themselves, and they don't like, they actually are threatened by people that seem to be very comfortable with who they are. I've noticed that a lot. But I'm very comfortable with who I am, so I don't really judge other people. I mean, you know, my niece and my nephew, I love them to death, and they've got piercings and tattoos everywhere. There are religions that would look at them and think that they're not spiritual, but they're extremely spiritual. They go to church. They're, you know, he comes from a very, very highly spiritual family. But if you just look at his appearance, all right, and he's got these piercings and tattoos everywhere. He's got them in his lip. He's got one in his eyebrow. He's got several in his ears, and he wears these big, they're studs where they kind of open up the earlobe larger and larger and larger. He's into that kind of stuff, you know. But if you sit down and you have a talk with him, he's got a heart, you know, bigger than the United States. He's just a very kind person. He's kind of goofy, and I tease him, and he knows that. I mean, I've said this to him. But he's also very smart, and, you know, and he and my niece have been married now for quite a long time, and I guess it's over 5 years, and they're just a wonderful couple. But if you look at them from a distance and judge them on their appearance, you would never see what beautiful, loving, kind people they are, and smart. They're both very smart. So you really can't look at images to figure out who somebody is. You got to talk to them for 5 minutes.
Well, I think that we're such a visual people. You know, everything, we talk about this a lot, and of course, as the difference, though, is other people have altered your visual perception. Other input. If you're a kid and you see somebody, you know, I talk about this frequently because I can still remember it vividly. And I was little enough to be being carried. So 2, maybe, we were in Washington, D.C., and we were in the Pentagon because my uncle worked there in the
in the
restaurant part of the Pentagon.
Uh-huh.
And they walked me in. I remember being carried by my Uncle Raymond, and we walked into this huge place, and all I remember is everything was white and silver. And they handed me to the first black man that I'd ever seen. And he was, in my memory, he was enormous. And he was in starched white chef's uniform with one of those real high chef's hats.
Uh-huh.
And I remember being very close to his face and thinking to myself, how interesting this is. I've never seen anybody this color. I remember that.
Wow.
But I had no fear. He grabbed a hold of me and hugged on me. I felt totally and completely safe. And I think about it now and I think to myself, there was no fear involved. So
mm-hmm.
I think much of our decisions and our judgmental behavior is, like I said, fed to us. And And if we never have an opportunity to know different, we swallow it. So
right.
I think that that is a big part of what the problem is. But when you have a school, a religious-based school, that actually turns a beautiful little girl like this away because she prefers to, I mean, God, look at Annie Oakley. Or who was the other one? Calamity Jane. Or any of those girls way back in the day, they kind of had to be that person. If there was no men in their family, they took up the reins of being, you know, the protector of their families. They shot guns. They rode horses with the best of them. They did all that stuff. So,
and what about all the women that you see in the news today that are extremely feminine and beautiful and admittedly gay? So what does appearance have to do with anything? How can you look at a woman or a man by their physical appearance and say they're heterosexual or gay? I mean, it's nonsensical anyway. You know, you have bodybuilders, you have football players that are gay men, right? And then you have the stereotypical, very effeminate, you know, hairdresser, you know, with the stereotypical way they speak, and they're very dramatic in the way they move. All right. So if you put the football player, right, and the bodybuilder and the hairdresser next to each other, everybody's going to say, well, the hairdresser is gay and the other two guys are heterosexual, and you're wrong. All three of them are gay, you know. Mm-hmm. So physical appearance has nothing to do with it. You know, you have women that are model beautiful that are gay, and you have women like me that are tomboys. I'd rather wear jeans and T-shirts. It's what I'm comfortable in, but I'm not gay. So, you know, the physical appearance, that's when we allow our eyes and our ears to deceive us. You know, I heard a video, an audio once, and the guy was talking about how people make judgments on what they see and hear without ever allowing themselves to get to know another individual. And it's one of the things that's sad, because they either get into relationships that are not good for them based on inappropriate analysis of the person, like people hear an English accent. They instantly think the person's intelligent just because they have an English accent. Meanwhile, what they're saying might be garbage, but they'll get into business with somebody with an English accent instead of the guy wearing the overalls with the Southern accent. And meanwhile, the guy on the overalls really knows what he's doing, and the guy with his English accent is a nitwit, you know. But they allow their ears of the way the people are speaking to influence their impression of who's the better business person, instead of listening to what they're saying, but not the inflection of their voice and how they're saying it. And that's where we trip ourselves up. The same thing with physical appearance. You're going to judge somebody on physical appearance instead of what they're saying to you, and almost invariably you're going to make the wrong assessment. I remember woman was in that same lecture. She worked at a furniture store. And she said this man came in, and he was in work clothes. You know, he had jeans on, he had a ripped T-shirt. He looked like he was a laborer. And he's walking around a very, very expensive furniture store. This is downtown West Palm Beach. In fact, I know the woman. And it was a great story, because she said nobody would approach this guy to help him. And she just instinctively, just from being a human being and somebody decent, was like, you know what, I don't care if I make a dime off this guy. He's in here, and he deserves to be helped. So she went over and approached him, and she says, I'm sorry you've been waiting. She says, can I help you? He ends up spending an hour and a half in the store. Turns out he's a multimillionaire, and he was renovating one of his homes, and he spent over $500,000 in furniture over the next year and a half on his house, and she made all that commission just because she wanted to be kind to somebody who she thought, she didn't think she was going to get commission from him either, but she thought that it was unethical to just ignore him, and none of the other people would approach him. As he walked into their departments, they walked away from him because they didn't think he had any money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that happened to me so many times in restaurant work, I can't even tell you. I, you know, it used to be, Rena, you take them. because nobody else would want to deal with somebody who didn't look, you know, like what everybody else thought they were supposed to look like. I can't tell you how many lifelong friends I've made that way. So I think a big part of this, though, is all the things that we teach. Last week we talked so much about morality. It is immoral to judge somebody by what they look like. It is immoral to assume you know who somebody is inside by what the outside looks like. When you talk about morality and morals, those things are wrong. And if you do that, and we all do, I admitted to it last week, and I had this conversation with somebody that I've come to be very close to this week about my story about meeting somebody for the first time and chastising myself later for actually making assumptions that weren't true. Because
right.
It's ingrained in us, you know. And if you do that, at least be smart enough to realize that it's happening to you and put yourself in check. I mean, this is, when I think about kids that I grew up with when I was, you know, like, say, between the ages of 5 and 10, there were all kinds. There were all kinds, right? There were girls that would never dream of getting dirty who wore, this was back in the day, of course, they wore white anklet socks. And if they got dirty, they left school, you know.
Yeah.
If they got mud on them because it was raining outside and they're white, they would go home from school. They would figure out a way to go home because they could not wear those. That's, you know, so what? But then you had girls who came to school with dirty socks on when they got there. And it didn't mean anything to them. And, of course, I'm sure they were their mother's biggest challenge, but it was who they were and what they didn't care about, they didn't care about. So, you know, it is strange to accept all the different nuances that we all have and what's important to all of us. I said to somebody the other day, we were talking, Joshy was laying on the couch beside me. His head was halfway in my lap. And I said, did you take a shower this morning? Every time he raised his arms, I was like, Josh, good God, go take a shower, right? So we all picked on him. So he goes and takes a shower. He lays down beside me again. He smells wonderful. Within probably 20 minutes, I said, you didn't put deodorant on, did you? He goes, no. Graham, I just took a shower. I said, you need deodorant, honey, because you're starting to smell bad already. You know, and everybody, you know, his brother and his Spikey's girlfriend, they're all sitting there, and his dad, and we all picked on him a little bit. And he goes, Graham, why do things like this bother you? And I said, I don't know. I don't have an answer for you. I just know that I don't like it when people don't smell good.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reason for it. Go take a shower. There's soap. There's water. There's towels, and there's deodorant, you know. And he says, I said, I know I have a hang-up about it because I often shower twice a day, sometimes more often, depending on what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I said, so it's one of my hang-ups, so we just all have to deal with it. But
not really a hang-up. That's just normal hygiene. I mean, it's offensive. Body odor is made from bacteria. It's offensive. And when you understand that, it bothers you to be around it. I don't really think that's a hang-up. I think that's just normal hygiene.
Yeah, but it doesn't bother everybody, honey. That's my point. Some people, you know,
I think
scary.
The only people
they
it doesn't
don't even
bother
care.
Have sinus issues and they're not really getting the full aroma.
Maybe. That could be, I suppose. That could
but they know it would bother
be.
Me.
Yeah.
You know, and then think about it. There are people that live in like in these communities where they're all natural and they don't use anything, and my goodness, they make your eyes water to be around them, but when they're around each other, it doesn't bother them at all. So, you know, I mean, remember we had people at the Institute that didn't use anything, and it'd be like they'd buy you, and you'd really be aware they were there. But for them and for the people that lived like them, because they didn't use deodorant, so a lot of times they wouldn't bathe very often, or they would just, like, sponge bathe or whatever. that this was, they wanted to get like back to nature and all that. I don't think there's anything wrong with you. I don't use anything that's got aluminum in it. I use just straight, you know, deodorant. I don't use antiperspirant, you know, so I use things that have natural ingredients in them and all that. But there are some people who don't want to use anything, you know, and I don't like being around them, but I also respect their decision. They're not doing it out of laziness. They're doing it out of a desire to be closer to nature because they don't want to put anything on their bodies. So that's different. But if you're just doing it because you don't have good hygiene habits, that's different. I would kind of go to that person and say, hey, you know, take a shower.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's me, and I think it's nice. I think it's nice to you know, to have other people's reactions in mind. I think it's a good thing to be aware of what's going on around you. Now, so we're all going to send out some really kudos to this young girl and to her great-grandmother, who just was like amazing in the video. She was very down to earth. She loves this little girl. You can see that totally and completely. And this little girl is just happier being who she wants to be, and that's who she should be. So now I was sent this letter from somebody who's a friend and a listener, and we talk frequently, and she's been on the show before. But I am blown away by this. This letter should be used to fire this incredibly ignorant and stupid teacher. This is precisely why your kids don't have a chance in public school anymore. Dear Mrs. So-and-so, you may already know this, but in case Alex has neglected to tell you, I am assigning him to detention for 1 hour this Friday, April 22nd. The reason is as follows. Alex consistently defied me. During class, he contradicted me numerous times when I insisted that the length of 1 kilometer was greater than that of 1 mile. Every other student in the class accepted my lesson without argument. But your son refused to believe what I told him, offering such rebuttals as, you're lying to the class, and commanding other students to challenge my curriculum. The next paragraph starts with this sentence. Although he was correct, Alex's actions show a blatant disregard for authority.
Oh, my God.
And a complete lack of respect for his school. In the future, Alex would be better off simply accepting my teachings without resistance. Please see to it that your son understands this. Regards, the signature of the teacher. Now, what do you think of that, Shel?
Wow. Well, what I think of that is I think there's a lot of teachers that think that way. I think that's one of the things that's wrong with the world, because our young people are actually being taught not to question things, and that's completely wrong. I mean, there's so many things I can say. I'm like blithering inside my head right now that a teacher would actually say that. But here, anybody can make a mistake, anybody. And if you realize that you're being given incorrect information, you should challenge it, all right? And especially when it's coming from somebody that's like a teacher. I mean, even if the kid got rude with it, which he shouldn't, but it doesn't sound like, she doesn't say he got rude. She just said that he challenged her. He said, you're wrong. And when she insisted, that's when he called her a liar. But I know that a kilometer is less than a mile, you know, and for her to say that it's more, it's like, oh, my God, that's one of the reasons why, you know, our kids don't excel a lot of times, because they're being given misinformation. I've spoken to kids that have learned things, you know, historical facts that I know are absolutely incorrect, and I can't believe the books haven't been fixed yet. This is stuff that's been on TV, and yet in some curriculums they're still teaching incorrect things about history. What is the point of that? And that the teachers actually defend their positions to keep putting out, you know, muck into kids' heads. That's, yeah, I agree that teacher should be fired.
Mm-hmm.
any teacher go ahead.
What's wrong with the attitude that you can tell that this teacher feels a little bit righteous? She's wrong, admittedly wrong, and yet she feels righteous about the fact that she wanted this young person, this young man, to blindly believe her.
Right.
Following
authority.
Unbelievable.
Well, there are religions that teach that, and there are a lot of factions that teach that, like, you know, do what I say without question, and that's not what life is supposed to be. That's when, you know, it's interesting you bring that up, because there was something I saw on one of these, you know, like Discovery Channels, and they have some interesting things about how the brain works, and they had this one study that was done, I forget how many years it was, but there was this scientist named Milgram. And interestingly enough, there was a Law and Order episode done where they had a sergeant, a police officer with the last name of Milgram that was, I think, was actually created from this thing that I'm about to talk about, because the last name was the same. But anyway, so there was a scientist named Milgram, and he came up with this thing where they brought these test subjects in, and you had a test subject in one room with a buzzer in their hand. They couldn't see the person in the other room, but they could hear them. And they had to ask them a series of questions. And every time they answered the question incorrectly, they had to give them a shock. And each time they got shocked, the intensity of the electrical shock went up. Now, they were both told that they were volunteering for this test. They were trying to see something about the person giving the shock was told that they're trying to see what kind of shock people can withstand, and that the person in the other room signed up for this experiment also. So by the time they got, like, to the seventh or eighth shock, the person that they could hear, remember, they couldn't see them, but the person they could hear was saying, oh, my God, this is getting too much. I can't handle this anymore. I want out of this experiment. So the person giving the shock would say, all right, I have to stop this. And they say, no, you can't. They signed paperwork saying they would go through until the 12th shock. You have to continue with this test. And they said 60% of the people continued, even though the people at the other end were screaming, were saying, get me out of here, I can't handle this, you're killing me, because they were being told by a person in authority that they signed a piece of paper and they had to continue with it. Only 40% of the people said, no, this is nonsense, I don't care, sue me then, I want out of this, and refused to shock the person anymore. But the majority of the people kept doing it. They did not think independently for themselves.
I'm going to be interested if we get any feedback on this. I mentioned my granddaughter is here, who's a teacher, and she's talked on the show before and everything, and she's so enjoying being a teacher. Of course, she teaches first grade and second grade.
Oh, and by the way, I forgot to make the point of that whole test. There was nobody on the other end. The test was about the person administering it, not about the pain. It had nothing to do. The whole test was to see whether or not people would blindly follow an instruction and not have their own personal, you know, sympathies and understanding of a situation come into play. So the person at the other end was an actor. They weren't being shocked, and they were told to over-exaggerate that they were being shocked and being in pain and that they couldn't handle it, but that nothing was actually being done to them. So the people that were administering the shocks were told that the test was to test pain management, but it actually wasn't. It was testing the people that had the trigger finger to see if they would continually do something, just blindly follow authoritative instructions.
And did they?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
But I mean, there was never any, at the end of the show, was there any talk about, you know, I wanted to stop, or I didn't want to do that, and this was hard for me to do.
Some of the people were traumatized. Some of the people that kept doing it actually felt traumatized because they felt they couldn't stop. Like I said, you know, it was the small. Thank God, 40%. You know, thank God it wasn't a smaller percentage, but it was a sad fact that the majority did keep doing it. And only 40% of the people found the personal courage and integrity to say, no, I don't care that I signed a piece of paper. I'm not going to inflict this harm. The person at the other end is saying they don't want in this anymore, you know, and then just refused to continue shocking them. But the majority kept doing the shocking. And that's what they were trying to show is that, you know, they call them sheep. They said people tend to be sheep where they don't think for themselves. They just blindly follow an authoritative instruction without thinking it through. So this kid railed against the authority, and the teacher is like this Milgram fellow. You know, just blindly follow me. Even if I'm giving you wrong information, because I'm the teacher, you got to follow me. And it's nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Well, you see that happening all the time. You really do see that happening all the time. And there's only a few people who are courageous enough to stand up. My oldest grandson, when he was in high school, he would come home and tell me he had an argument with a teacher, especially when it had to do with, like, math. The teacher would explain something to them, give them a problem on the board, and then tell them to show the steps, you know, as to how you got the answer. And Spikey would say, I don't need to do the steps. I know the answer just by doing it in my head. And the teacher said, I want them written out, Spike. That's part of the lesson. And he said, but that's a waste of my time. I can give you the answer right now by looking at the problem. And he would get in trouble in this class, and the teacher would send home notes telling us that he wouldn't follow procedure. And I'd say, Spike, he wants to see if you're working it out properly so that your answer will always be right. And he says, Graham, my answers are right because I know he had a reason for why it worked every time. And I said, but he's trying to teach you that you have to do things procedurally. And it's not just about math, it's about everything. But he and this teacher would butt heads, and he would come home, he would show me his problems. Every question or every problem would be correct, but he'd fail the test because he didn't show the procedure. So, you know, I had problems with that because I kind of agreed with the teacher. Although I understood Spike's plight, I still understood the teacher. So I didn't feel the way this person must feel about this teacher already admitting that, yes, he's wrong, you know, and the kid is right, but that doesn't matter. He's supposed to blindly follow him. But there is there is this attitude, you know, do what I say, not what I do. Do what I tell you to do because I'm the boss. I'm the teacher. I'm the mom. I'm the dad. I'm the boss, period. That is that's something that is worldwide. Our religious, hierarchy, everybody is like that. Everybody thinks that they're in a seat. If something is given to them and is their responsibility, they often will say, just do it because I'm telling you to do it. And I don't know that I want my kids to do that. I don't know. I did when I was a kid. I was brought up. That was my father's favorite line. You know, you don't ask me why I'm telling you to do it. You just do it.
Oh.
So I don't know that I want people to be that, that gullible of a follower. I want teachers and parents and people in respectable positions to be respected, you know, by young people. But I don't want them to blindly follow. That's how so many of them get in so much trouble already. Many of them are, you know, we watch these shows where mom sometimes is the ringleader.
Mm-hmm.
One
thing that's important for people to learn, and the earlier they learn it, the better, is something called discernment. And discernment means that you have the ability to analyze something that's being said to you to, you know, for its value, all right? Just because you're hearing something from someone in authority, just because you're hearing something from a public speaker who's maybe very well known, or an actor or an actress, or, you know, somebody that you think you should be able to take what they're saying at face value, you still have your own personal reaction. You get a gut feeling when you're hearing something that's not quite right. So when you practice discernment, that means you research. If you know you're correct, like this kid knew that a kilometer was less than a mile, okay, was shorter than a mile, you know, he knew he was correct because he knew how long a kilometer was, okay? I think it's 0.622 of a mile or something like that, but it is less than a mile, okay? He knew he was correct. But you also have to be taught how to be diplomatic and polite. So there's a lot of emotions in there, practicing discernment, being able to hear something and say, no, this isn't accurate, even though I'm hearing it from somebody that I should respect and that I respect in other areas, they're wrong about this, and then teaching them the appropriate delivery. And this is all part of growing up. You know, and they may not learn it at 15, but as they get older, these are personality traits that can help them succeed in life. You know, to be able to recognize when they're hearing, you know, truthful information or information that's good, and how to diplomatically handle it when they hear something and they know it's not correct. How to correct somebody in a way that's not confrontational or offensive. And, you know, it takes a while to master those personality traits, but it's something that's certainly worthwhile.
Yeah. Well, and I agree with that, and I think that a big part of learning about who you are as a person, as a child, as a teenager, has to do with how you assess the facts and the information that other people give you. If you can analyze something that somebody says to you that you're not really sure about and make a good decision, then that speaks volumes about who you are becoming as an adult.
Mm-hmm. Listen to this. I found the Milgram. It's MILGRAM. It's called Milgram Experiment. If you Google that, there's dozens of hits on it. But it said results. They explain the whole experiment on here. I'm not going to read that because I already told everybody what it was. But it says results of the Milgram Experiment. The level of shock that the participant was willing to deliver was used as the measure of obedience. And that's what this was. It was obedience in the face of, you know, like, where a lot of people wouldn't. How far do you think that most participants were willing to go? When Milgram posed this question to a group of Yale University students, it was predicted that no more than maybe 3 out of 100 participants, or 3%, would deliver the maximum shock. In reality, it was 65%. It was higher than I remembered. I thought it was 65% of the participants delivered the maximum shock. Of the 40 participants in the study, 26 delivered the maximum shocks, while 14 stopped before reaching the highest levels. It is important to note that many of the subjects became extremely agitated, distraught, and angry at the experimenter, yet they continued to follow orders to the end anyway. Because of the concerns about the amount of anxiety experienced by many of the participants, all the subjects were debriefed, and about 84% of them said they were glad to have participated, while only 1% regretted their involvement. Once they found out that they weren't really injuring somebody, it alleviated any sense of guilt, all right? But 1% of them, even though they found out it wasn't real, it made them feel sick about the fact that they continued to the end. And then they go on with discussing the Milgram experiment. There's been more studies done like this over the years where they've taken this model now and done it in other arenas. And then they go on to discuss it a little bit more because there's some ethical things here that because these people didn't realize they were being experimented on, and they talk about the ethics of the experiment and all that. But there was a Law and Order episode with, what's that famous comedian, the one who was on Mork and Mindy? Oh, my God, I'm drawing a blank on his name.
Robin Williams,
yeah. There was a Law and Order episode with Robin Williams, one of my favorite, where he played this guy who called himself Officer Milgram for the same reason. and he would taunt people as an authority figure to break the law, saying he was a police officer, and then have them do things that were obviously not okay because they thought they were being told to do it by a police officer. But they didn't talk about this study on it, and I was so shocked when I saw that show the other day, and I said, that's where Law and Order must have gotten the inspiration for that character from this experiment that was done back in the 1960s.
Well, in the 60s, what's the deal with that? We're going to have to do a little research about some of the really atrocious things that happened in the 60s. For some reason,
mm-hmm.
the
60s, in the name of science.
Yeah, real turning point in regard to sociology and psychology and all the different things that go along with that and what makes us tick.
Mm-hmm.
In the name of, some real abusive things were done to people. And, of course, like I said, I mentioned last week the other orphanage after we talked about the children, the demise of the children that were in the unwed mother's home, and then the story that came up right after that about the diphtheria immunizations that were being given to kids to experiment with diphtheria, and many of them succumbed. And
mm-hmm.
there is the controversy about population control, and there is the theory of autism and the connection between autism and immunizations. And I even talked with some of the older grandchildren yesterday. We had a long afternoon visiting, and we talked about shots and immunizations and why it was designed, what the thought was way back in the beginning was to give a taste and let your immune system build up antibodies against some of these childhood diseases. And the idea was an awesome one. It sounds like the perfect solution. But then, as usual, we got carried away and too daring and too cocky, if you will, and led to a lot of other issues. And there is the big consensus or belief that autism is on the rise, and many, many people out there believe that autism is on the rise due to immunizations. Now, Shell and I have our own feelings about this, and we have discussed this privately, and we've kind of made a conscious decision to not really go into this on the air because it's too
controversial.
Yeah, there's just too much controversy involved with it. But I would be willing and would consider it an honor to be a sounding board for these issues. If some of you out there are young moms, young dads, and you're confused about what is right and what is wrong, and you're like the boy who knows the difference between a kilometer and a mile, and you're not just going to lay down and say, okay, you're right, when you know that they're not. So, or the little girl who knows who she is, and you're not going to tell her she's somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Things are things to be proud of. To be able to stand on your own feet and to know who you are is incredibly important. So, if somebody would like to have an open forum in regard to immunizations, and if there's somebody out there, nurses often have input about this and very often stay quiet because it's their, it's their livelihood, for one thing. Even some doctors that I've met have mixed emotions about immunizations. So I do want to put it out there. If somebody would like to talk about this, and Renee's heart to heart, Shelley and I will not take a stand, but we will listen and be a sounding board if anybody has anything to say about this. On another quick note, because we're already down to 5 minutes, I do want to update everybody about the story of Carrie and Camden, her little boy who was born on March March 31st. And it looks as though everything is moving forward, and it looks as though most of the powers that be are seeing Carrie's side of this issue. And I am thrilled about this, because I believe that it's another part of our lives that is getting away with too much and without having to answer to anybody. It's scary when somebody is put in charge and nobody ever questions their decisions and things like that.
Right.
I've always been a firm believer that everybody needs to be watched. Even the best people need to be watched because things kind of snowball out of control. And I think that we need to keep some really good positive energy out there for Carrie and the rest of her family. I think that I think she may win this, and I hope that my feelings are true on this. But I did want everybody to know that it's moving forward. I can't really give any information at this point in time because it's all in mid transaction, so I can't really give facts
right.
and like that. I can just say that it is moving forward, that she's been relentless. She's a true mother lioness, and that shows in everything that she's doing, as are many of our listeners. I've been conversing this morning with Donna, who's been on the show several times, and she is a nurse, and she's had issues in her lifetime that she shared with us that made her stronger and some that hurt her a bit, but almost always made her stronger. And she's one of the most comical, friendliest, lovingest women I've ever come across. And she was one of the supporters way in the beginning of my grandson being hurt. And she and Gary and Lynn Glendenny and John Radke, and there's quite a handful of people who have stayed in touch with me ever since Mike first got hurt. And you realize this October, it's 5 years since Mike
wow.
got hurt. And a long time to stay close with all these people that I've never really even laid eyes on. So it's kind of cool that that we're all still so close and such good friends. And they all are avid supporters of the radio show and believe that what we're doing here is needed and has some tremendous value. So for that, I thank them all. So she's going in the right direction. I think that the stories that we told today and opening the door to the immunizations are a sign of what's going to happen in the weeks to come. We will talk about more controversial stuff, but Shelley and I will maintain just to be a sounding board. So if you need to talk about them, by all means. And if we can dig up more information to help in regard to all these things, we're happy to do so. Shelley's a great investigator, a great, great investigator. I'm not as good as Shelley is, but she's relentless when it comes to investigating facts, figures, etc. So we will help in any way that we can. I want everybody to have a great day today. Shelley, you want to say a few things about the couple topics we talked about today? Because we're down to 1 minute, honey.
Right, right. Well, the bottom line is that people should be, children should be encouraged to be who they are, but not to follow, don't follow somebody else in order to be unique. Go with what makes you feel good, what makes you feel empowered, what makes you feel good about yourself and others, and listen to that little voice inside of you, because 99 times out of 100, it's going to be correct. So people need to be taught to have faith in themselves and faith in the fact that we do have guidance around us all the time. And if you're feeling bad about something, it probably means what you're hearing isn't accurate. And just question it. Question it and research it. Just don't blindly follow information you hear from other people, especially when it's about you yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's a great point. And I want to I want to second that, and I believe we should always be who we are. And it's not necessary to reshape who you are to please someone else. If you have to do that to please someone else, that person is not who you think they are. So everybody go out and have a great day today. I hope you have lots of sunshine and breezy air here in South Florida. God bless, and we will be back tomorrow. Bye-bye, everybody. Bye, sweetie. Talk to you later.
Bye, Irene. Bye, everyone. Have a wonderful day.